Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is. I'm Ashley Thompson. What's more important, your employee or your customer? A popular business expression is, the customer is always right. But you should never say always. In the second part of today's show, we hear about how one restaurant dealt with a rude customer. But first, we hear about a report on whiskey, a popular alcoholic drink. But this story is not about drinking it. Jonathan Evans brings us more on this story.
Waste products from a popular alcoholic drink could be used in the future to make biofuel. Researchers say the new fuel, based on whiskey, could reduce demand for oil. They say using less oil could cut pollution that studies have linked to climate change. Scotland is the largest producer of whiskey in the world. And a Scottish professor has found how to take the byproducts from distilling whiskey and turn them into a form of alcohol called biobutanol. Biobutanol can be used as a fuel. Whiskey comes from grain, such as corn, rye, or wheat. First, the liquid is purified. It is heated until it becomes a gas. The gas is then cooled, and the resulting liquid collected. Martin Tangney is director of the Biofuel Research Center at Napier University in Edinburgh. He says less than 10% of what comes out can be considered whiskey. The rest is mainly one of two unwanted byproducts, pot ale and barley. Tangney says the two byproducts can be produced to create a new material, biobutanol. He says the whiskey-based biofuel provides more power than bioethanol, a fuel made from plants like corn or sugarcane. He says it has almost the same amount of energy as the gasoline used to power automobiles. Tangney says bioethanol has only 70% of the energy produced from gasoline. He adds that automobile engines do not need to be changed for biobutanol to work. The Scottish professor is also the founder of Celtic Renewables. The company produces biobutanol at a factory in Belgium. Tangney does not expect biobutanol to replace gasoline, but thinks the two fuels can be mixed together. He says it is possible the fuel may also be used in airplanes, ships, and in heaters. He says drivers would also be helping the environment by reducing the oil that we consume by putting this into their cars. Celtic Renewables has received $17 million from the British government to build a production facility in Scotland. The center is expected to be operational within 3 years. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. After a short break, we will return to As It Is. Welcome back. You are listening to the VOA Learning English program, As It Is. We just heard about using a popular alcoholic drink as fuel. Now we turn to the restaurant business. People cheered the owners of a restaurant in Alaska for defending an autistic employee. The worker had been insulted and yelled at by a customer for delivering the wrong food. The restaurant worker has autism, a disorder that causes problems in forming relationships and in communicating with other people. Some words that may be new in this story are work ethic, which means to value hard work, and someone who is rude does not have concern or respect for the rights and feelings of other people. You can also call rude people impolite. Now, Anna Mateo brings us that story.
The owners of a restaurant in Alaska won international praise after defending their autistic employee. Autism is a disorder that makes relationships and talking to others difficult. When the employee delivered the wrong food to a customer's house, that customer reacted severely and unkindly. Even after the employee corrected the mistake, the customer continued to yell. And that same customer cursed and used foul language with the restaurant owner's daughter. So the owners fired the customer. Restaurant owners PJ and Spiro Yalopsos have added the customer to the restaurant's Do Not Deliver list. That customer is now persona non grata, Latin for an unwelcomed person. PJ Yalopsos wrote on the restaurant's Facebook page, "You would think, in the year 2015, the majority of the population would have learned or at least heard about autism." Yalopsos said the employee has worked at the Little Italy restaurant in Anchorage, Alaska for 2 years. She said the worker was very upset about the angry customer. Yalopsos describes the employee as a seriously gifted university student who is curious about the world. She adds that the employee also has an amazing personality, great sense of humor, and a strong work ethic. This employee is also one who will not have to deal with that rude customer anymore, said Yalopsos. Reached at home by VOA, Yalopsos said she is happy about the positive comments she and her husband are receiving. By Tuesday afternoon, her Facebook posting about the incident received more than 30,000 likes and hundreds of positive comments. Comments and emails came from Australia, the United Kingdom, Ireland, Namibia, and the United Arab Emirates. Yalopsos said she spent a couple of emotional days crying over the posts on the Facebook page. She adds that many parents from around the country who have children with spectrum disorders wrote to her about the incident. She said their stories hurt my heart. A spokesperson for a group serving people with autism wrote, "Thank you, Little Italy, for shining a spotlight on autism and for hiring people whom others may not." Another comment on Facebook that she found striking is a woman who thanked them for hiring someone who is differently abled. I'm Anna Mateo. We want to hear from you. Write to us in the comment section or share your views on how this restaurant owner handled the attack on her employee on our Facebook page.
Thanks, Anna. I'm Ashley Thompson. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. And check us out on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter for other Learning English programs.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
and welcome to the VOA Learning English Program, Words in Their Stories. Liar, Liar, Pants on Fire. Children all over the United States know this simple rhyme. They say it when someone gets caught in a lie. In other words, when someone gets busted for lying. The word lie comes from Old English through even older German. A lie is an untruth. It is intentional and usually has consequences. But not all lies are created equal. People often use white lies to prevent hurting the feelings of others or to save themselves trouble. For example, let's say you are eating dinner at your boss's house and the food is really bad. When your boss asks you, "How do you like the meatloaf? It's an old family recipe." It is a good idea to say you love it. White lie to the rescue. Parents and other adults are known to tell white lies to children. Some white lies, such as lying about Santa Claus, are part of a tradition and are meant for fun. Some white lies are to protect children. For example, when a child asks about a person who has died, adults may say the dead person is simply sleeping. These lies are meant to help, not hurt, but they are still technically lies. Even adults may sometimes prefer to hear a lie than a truth that is too difficult to face. In the song "Tell Me Lies" by the rock group Fleetwood Mac, a woman is asking for lies, sweet little lies. Another kind of relatively harmless lie is called a fib. It is a little unimportant lie. Fibbers who fib are usually not out to hurt anyone. Sometimes people simply make things up. Other times they stretch the truth or exaggerate. In other words, they add details to the truth to make a story better. Bending the truth is also not a severe lie. If you bend the truth, you take the truth and change it very slightly. A half-truth is trickier. It could be like the name says, a statement that is half true and half false. Or it could be a statement that is completely true but shows only one part of the real story. Half-truths are meant to deceive or to avoid responsibility. These examples are all clever, subtle ways of lying. They are the opposite of outright lies. These type of lies are direct. They are also called out-and-out, barefaced, or bold-faced lies. Many word experts agree that the original expression is barefaced lie, and that it began in the 1600s. At that time, bare meant bold. Also at that time in history, almost all men had facial hair. It was considered quite bold for a man to be clean-shaven or bare-faced. Eventually, the word for hairless went from bare to bald, and so did the description for an obvious lie. So these days, you can use bold-faced, bare-faced, and even bald-faced to mean a lie that is obvious. They all mean that there is no mistake or making excuses. This person is lying. Bare-faced liars lie easily and often. They lie through their teeth, we like to say. The group word for lies is pack. Someone who tells a pack of lies tells one lie after another. There are packs of lies, and there are webs of lies. This expression may have come from a line of Scottish poetry. "Oh, what a tangled web we weave, when first we practice to deceive." To be tangled in a web of one's own lies is no place to be. I'm Anna Mateo. You can't hide your lies.
People in America, a program in special English on the Voice of America. In the 1850s, women in the United States began to try to gain the same rights as men. One woman was a leader in the campaign to gain women the right to vote. I'm Stan Busby.
And I'm Shirley Griffith. Today, we tell about a fighter for rights for women, Susan B. Anthony.
In 1776, a new nation declared its freedom from Britain. The Declaration of Independence was the document written to express the reasons for seeking that freedom. It stated that all men were created equal. It said that all men had the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Not every citizen of the new United States of America had one important right, however. That was the right to vote. At first, the only people permitted to vote in the United States were white men who owned property and could read. By 1860, most white male citizens over the age of 21 had the right to vote. The 14th and 15th Amendments to the Constitution gave black male citizens the right to vote. These amendments were passed in 1868 and 1870.
Women were not really full citizens in America in the 1800s. They had no economic independence. For example, everything a woman owned when she got married belonged to her husband. If a married woman worked, the money she made belonged to her husband. In addition, women had no political power. They did not have the right to vote. In the 1850s, women organized in an effort to gain voting rights. Their campaign was called the Women's Suffrage Movement. Suffrage means the right to vote. American women sought to gain that right for more than 70 years.
One of the leaders of the movement was Susan B. Anthony of Massachusetts. Miss Anthony was a teacher. She believed that women needed economic and personal independence. She also believed that there was no hope for social improvement in the United States until women were given the same rights as men. The rights included the right to vote in public elections.
Susan B. Anthony was born in 1820. Her parents were members of the Quaker religion. She became one, too. The Quakers believed that the rights of women should be honored. They were the first religious group where women shared the leadership with men.
As a young woman, Susan had strong beliefs about justice and equality for women and for black people. And she was quick to speak out against what she believed was not just. Many young men wanted to marry her, but she could not consider marrying a man who was not as intelligent as she. She once said, "I can never understand why intelligent girls should want to marry fools just to get married. Many are willing to do so, but I am not." She did meet some young men who were intelligent, but it always seemed that they expected women to be their servants, not their equals.
Susan B. Anthony became a school teacher in New York State. She realized that women could never become full citizens without some political power. They could never get such power until they got the right to vote. She went from town to town in New York State, trying to get women interested in their right to vote. But they did not seem interested. Miss Anthony felt this was because women were not able to do anything for themselves. They had no money or property of their own. The struggle seemed long and hard. She said,
"As I went from town to town, I understood more and more the evil we must fight. The evil is that women cannot change anything as long as they must depend on men for their very lives. Women cannot change anything until they themselves are independent. They cannot be free until they have the legal right to own property and to keep the money they make by working."
Miss Anthony went to every city, town, and village in New York State. She organized meetings in schools, churches, and public places. Everywhere she went, she carried pamphlets urging rights for women. She urged the lawmakers of New York to change the state law and give women the right to own property. Her campaign in New York failed at that time. But elsewhere, the struggle for women's rights was making progress.
In 1851, Susan B. Anthony met Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Mrs. Stanton also supported equal rights for women. Mrs. Stanton had many children. She needed to remain at home to raise her large family. Miss Anthony, however, was not married. She was free to travel, to speak, and to organize for the women's rights movement. The two women cooperated in leading the fight to gain rights for women in the United States. Their first important success came in 1860, when New York finally approved a married woman's law. For the first time in New York, a married woman could own property, and she had a right to the money she was paid for work she did. At last, Miss Anthony's campaign was beginning to show results. The campaign spread to other states.
The end of the American Civil War in 1865 freed Negroes from slavery. Susan B. Anthony felt that there was still much to be done to get full freedom for Negroes and also for women. She began to campaign for the right for Negroes and women to vote. The 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution was approved in 1868. It gave Negro men the right to vote. But it did not give women the right to vote.
Susan B. Anthony led efforts to have voting rights for women included in the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. Her efforts were not successful. Then Miss Anthony decided to test the legal basis of the 14th Amendment. She did this during the presidential election of 1872. On election day, Miss Anthony led a group of women to vote in Rochester, New York. 2 weeks later, Miss Anthony was arrested. She was charged with voting, although she had no legal right to do so.
Before her trial, Susan B. Anthony traveled around New York State. She spoke to many groups about the injustice of denying women the right to vote. She said,
"Our Democratic Republican government is based on the idea that every person shall have a voice and a vote in making the laws and putting them to work. It is we, the people, all the people, not just white men or men only, who formed this nation. We formed it to get liberty, not just for half of us, not just for half of our children, but for all, for women as well as men. Is the right to vote a necessary right of citizens? To my mind, it is a most important right. Without it, all other rights are nothing."
Susan B. Anthony was tried and found guilty of violating the law. She was ordered to pay $100 as a punishment. She said the law was wrong. She refused to pay. Miss Anthony then led efforts to gain voting rights for women through a new amendment to the Constitution. She traveled across the country to campaign for such an amendment until she was 75 years old. In 1904, she spoke to a committee of the United States Senate for the last time. The committee was discussing the proposal for an amendment to the Constitution giving women the right to vote. She knew the victory would come, but she also knew it would not come while she was alive.
Susan B. Anthony died in 1906 at the age of 86. 13 years later, in 1919, Congress passed the 19th Amendment to the Constitution. The amendment stated that the right to vote shall not be denied because of a person's sex. The amendment had to be approved by 3/4 of the states. It won final approval on August 26, 1920. It was called the Anthony Amendment to honor Susan B. Anthony.
This special English program was written by Shelley Gollist. It was produced by Lawan Davis. I'm Stan Busby.
And I'm Shirley Griffith. Join us again next week for another People in America program on the Voice of America.